We'll kick things off with a word from Andreas Georgiou, a UK MMA writer and interviewer who covers MMA and kickboxing for MMA Plus, but also moonlights as Bama's behind-the-scenes reporter on fight nights such as this one. All right, we're here at Bama 21 at the Barclaycard Arena here in Birmingham, the city where it all started off for Bama many moons ago. Joining me is a man who's deeply ensconced in the world of Bama, Mr. Andreas Georgiou. How are you doing, mate?
I'm doing good, Simon. Great to be on your podcast.
You're quite close to this. You know, you do a lot of the Access All Area stuff in the back. And you've been covering this sport at a domestic level consistently for a little while now. Give us a sense. Obviously, I tend to work more with the UFC side. I used to cover a bit of Bama back in the day. It's been a while since I've been here. Yeah. It's interesting to see the transition. I mean, how have you seen the sport growing domestically in the last few years or so?
Well, I first got on board with Bama watching it as a fan. Bama 4, Watson versus Reed, obviously such a huge fight. I don't even need to go into detail there of how big that is in terms of UK MMA. In terms of covering Bama, I believe my first Bama was Bama 14, so that was about a year and a half ago, 2 years. And since then, obviously Bama knew they were going through a bit of trouble at the time. And they've come on leaps and bounds since then. You know, we've seen certain things happen, you know, behind the scenes that have given Bama, you know, a bit more stability. Now, obviously, the Spike TV deal. And it just looks now that the promotion is just ready to finally accept their position atop of UK MMA.
It's interesting. I mean, you mentioned the Spike TV deal. That's huge, isn't it? I mean, now Spike have got that channel here in the UK, and they've jumped straight in. They've got Bama. Obviously, Bama had that sort of on-off deal with Channel 5.
Yeah.
But now they seem to have got themselves a stable home, which is important for any big promotion.
Of course, without a doubt. You have to look at the UFC. The UFC wouldn't be where they are without Spike TV and The Ultimate Fighter. You know, everyone talks about how important that Bonner-Griffin fight is. And for Bama, it's arguably the same with the Spike TV thing. Obviously, Channel 5 and Spike TV is still a Channel 5-owned company.
Yeah.
But now it seems that they've got this dedicated audience, this dedicated channel in Spike TV that want to promote fights. Not just, you know, it's not just this. It's boxing as well. Bellator's also on the channel, so it's an accumulative kind of network that I really think can help Bama grow, and it's absolutely fantastic for the promotion and for the sport over here in the UK.
And the actual sport as whole, and combat sports, obviously boxing has been long entrenched in the UK, the UK sporting psyche, if you like. MMA, kickboxing, it's all beginning to rise up now, and there seems to be a really strong market for it. How important are events like this to the growth of the sport in the UK?
Paramount, absolutely paramount. You know, you have to start as a contender. No one is born the champion, and you have to look to these domestic scenes, not just here in the UK, but Canada, America, Brazil. That's where your fighters are born, and that's where, you know, you see them grow as people, and that's, you know, where they eventually step up to the big leagues. Shows like Bama, absolutely so important, because it's not just that these guys can get experience. They're getting experience at a level that is important, at a high level. The biggest show in UK MMA. They're on TV. They've got media, you know, asking them questions. They're getting trained in how to respond correctly. So it's not just important in the terms of, yeah, I can improve my skills, but in all forms of the sport as well, that these fighters are nourishing themselves and becoming better products than possibly we've seen in years before.
And we've got some great up-and-coming talent. We've seen it already. I mean, we're about midway through the event, I reckon. Chuck's a couple of names, people who maybe in 18 months, 2 years, we might be seeing fighting in the big leagues, who are coming up through the Bama ranks. Who's the next star to sort of come through the ranks of Bama? We've had a few.
Well, one of them who we were speaking about earlier, Tom Breeze, who absolutely fantastic in his first pro win over in Brazil. But right now on the UK scene, you've got to look towards the bantamweight division. There's two big names that I think are going to surge, and that's Ed Arthur, undefeated, the current champion of Bama, most recently Bama 20, defeated Alan Philpott to win that belt. He is a phenomenal athlete. He's probably one of the best bantamweight fighters this country has ever produced, and trust me, he is definitely one to watch out with. His striking is superb, and his ground game as well is very, very, you know, high level for, you know, in the terms we're speaking. And as well, another fighter, Regis Sugden, obviously from the Sugden family, very rich in kickboxing history. Regis made the move over to MMA. You know, he's not had many fights under his belt, but every time he's showcased that he's here to stay. He's not just one of these guys moving over from kickboxing, oh, I can strike, I can do this. No, he's training jiu-jitsu down at Urban Kings, one of the best, you know, jiu-jitsu training camps that we have in this country down in London. So he's doing everything right, and he's another bantamweight name that you guys have to look for because, you know, he has it all.
One of the standout moments of the night for sure was when Rob C4 Sinclair, the Burnley lightweight, who is one of the most popular figures in the UK MMA and an absolute stalwart of the Bama promotion, made his long-awaited return. I think he'd been out for around 30 months. He had one fight for Bellator within that period of time. I think he's fought once in that spell, coming back from a busted Achilles and multiple knee ligament injuries as well that required surgery. Made an agreement between Bama and Bellator for him to fight on this card, and he produced an absolutely superb performance to win by TKO in the first round against Michael Brightman from the United States. But the story really was all about Rob and his comeback. I managed to grab him after the fight. He had a cold beer in his hand. He was sat on the stage and he was in relaxed, relieved and very satisfied mood. First off, congrats on getting a win. Long time out. You know, you're Mr. Bama, really. You know, you're the guy who's helped bring this promotion up to the level that it's out today. How satisfying was it for you after such a long layoff to come back into the Bama cage and score a first round finish?
Great. You know what? Looking back now, when I went to America and went to Bellator, I never thought in the wildest dreams I would be back here competing. Everything fell into place, really. I fought over in America, did okay, didn't do as well as, you know, if I went in there now, tomorrow, for example, I'd do a hell of a lot better than what I did. A lot of it was ring rust, you know what I mean? You can spar all you want in the gym and all that, but when someone's taking your head off a reel, throwing elbows and knees and stuff and wants to kill you, it's different. And luckily I got in 8 weeks later. Felt really confident in there. I've got, in the back I felt good, I felt strong, I felt just, you know, probably a bit too aggressive, a bit too emotional. I just wanted the win so bad, you know.
And given the layoff and, you know, the severity of the knee injury in particular, were there any nagging concerns or worries going into this?
No, not this fight. I know my Achilles heel, that's fine, no problem with that. Doubts of my knee going into America, naturally. Doctor said to me, physios, I've got a great physio, Emma, and a great strength and conditioning guy, David Bell, and they says to me, it's fine, you know, and if they say it's fine, it's fine, but still I had that niggling doubt over there. When he kicked me in my leg a couple of times, didn't feel anything. So the doubts went. 8 weeks later, I've come in there. If I've been waiting for him to kick me out, I'm not going to smile at the guy, you know what I mean? And that's fine now, you know what I mean? It's a case of just rehabbing it forever and a day. I don't want to rehab this leg. I rehab this leg, my arms, my head, everything like that. That's the way to go for me, you know? So I feel good, yeah. No nags, no niggling injuries, nothing.
Were you ever in a situation where, during the time you were off, you sort of think, I might not make it back? Were there ever any doubts then?
Yeah, there is always going to be doubts because you're going to have setbacks. It's like, you know, you'll have a goal of we want to, because I couldn't bend my leg for 2 months, you know what I mean? The first stage of rehab was obviously the operations, and then the second stage was to straighten my leg, because she said if you don't straighten your leg, you're going to have scar tissue build up and you'll always be bent, so you'll always walk with a little limp. So the first stage was straighten it no matter what, straighten it, and then bend it. And I thought, it took me 3 months to bend the leg, you know what I mean? So during that time, and I'm waking up and it's not bending anymore, I had doubts, you know what I mean? Muscle wastage, I had major doubts, but I've got a strong mind, you know what I mean? And that's probably what helps me through my life. And once it got past that stage, good people around me, you're going to do it. And I seen improvements eventually and all that. And I just kept going. I thought, you know what, I'm going to do this. And I did it.
Yeah, and you've come through the other side now, you've been successful. What's next for you?
I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I'm just going to... I'm getting married in August. You know, I've got a couple of holidays. I'm going to see my friends. I've neglected all my family, all my friends for the last... Been a bit selfish for the last year and a half, because I had to be. They all understand it. And I probably need a good sort of month off from training, because as soon as I got the all clear to train, I've been non-stop. And I got given the all clear about 14 months ago. And I've just been non-stop training. So, I've got a baby at home that I hardly see. I've got a daughter I hardly see. Me and girlfriend are getting married. She's organised everything. I ain't even been a part of it. So I'm just going to just take a month off, and then I'll see what happens after that.
Brilliant. And last one from me, and thanks for your time again. End of the fight. You got up on the cage there. in come the cornermen with the rucksack, out comes the old championship belt.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, and made you do that?
I was just at home, you know what I mean, and I thought, I was starting to get a bit emotional about 3 days ago, and I thought, you know what, I've never lost there. It's my championship, I never lost. I know I moved on to America and all that, but I thought, I'm just going to ruffle it up a little bit. I'm just going to just try and get the crowd a little bit, you know, harper in that lot. Get the belt out, my belt, do what I want with, you know what I mean? And I thought, I'll get on the cage, hopefully get a few cheers, a few smiles, probably get a few groans and a few who's he think he is type, but just having a bit of fun. It's nothing personal to anybody. You know, hopefully, you know, Stapes or Andre Fastman, someone takes it off him, you know. So good luck to them.
Brilliant. Well, whether it's in America or whether it's back here with Bama, looking forward to seeing you back in there again. It's good to see you back.
Cheers, pal.
Another fighter I was particularly keen to talk to on the night was Jack McGann, a product of the famed Wolfslayer Academy up near Liverpool. And he's someone who's come up through the ranks there under the tutelage of his father, Anthony McGann, who runs the gym up there. Obviously, that's a gym renowned for elite level talent. Michael the Count Bisping came up through that gym. And they also worked extensively with the likes of Chet Congo and Quinton Rampage Jackson. Jack's coming up through the domestic ranks. He's got an 8-1 record and racked up that 8th win here tonight against Aziz Stringer, who was a very late replacement. I believe he was the second replacement for this particular event. So it's a bit of a tricky one for the man known as the Pilgrim. I wanted to just get a sense from him of just how he feels dealing with the tag of being one of the best prospects in this country. All right, first off, congratulations on the win. Fantastic performance against a guy who came in at really short notice. Does that put an added pressure on you, the fact you're having to take on a guy who really you've not been preparing for?
I train for all types of guys. As I said, I don't tend to watch a lot of tape on guys. I'll have a little look, and then, but I don't let it, you know, haunt. I don't let them build demons within me and focus on what they're doing. I let me coaches look for me. But yeah, it was really off-putting, mostly due to the fact that I didn't think I was fighting. You know, Wednesday, another guy pulled out, and I was like, we're weighing in 2 days. You know, what are we going to, Wednesday night? Like, what are we going to do? So Aziz stepped in, and then it was at 74, which helped. I didn't have to kill myself to get to the weight. It was off putting, but not we couldn't handle. You know.
And on the topic of pressure, you know, you're one of the shining stars of the UK scene now. You know, you've got a fantastic record. A lot of people are talking about you as a real star of the future. Does that put added pressure on you as you try and make your way up through the ranks?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a few things. I'm the Wolf, like the Wolfslayer kid, and the only kid, and my dad's manager all the fighters, and you know, I've been fighting since I was a kid, and with all big names in the gym, and yeah, people are watching me and stuff. So it does a little bit, but I can't tell obviously because I'm in the position I'm in. I can't tell what any other fighters are like, but you know, it's a fight at the end of the day, and people are watching. You can't not feel pressure. Anyone who says they don't feel any is lying. That's what I say. So yeah,
and you mentioned obviously coming from the Wolfslayer, which is incredibly well known training camp, not just domestically but around the world. How much of a benefit is that to you, obviously coming through and all of the great experience that camp has had down the years with guys going right to the top of the sport?
You know, there's a reason for that. It's not just because it's our coaching, it's our weight cuts, it's the mentality we spar, it's everything. You know, it's got a really good formula, and it's worked, and it's currently working. So it only goes one way, you know, and if but nothing else, we're always exciting fighters as well. You know, if you watch Wolfslayer, lad, you want to go for it. You know, that's what people want to see.
And how do you go about sort of managing your career going forward? I mean, obviously there's a lot of talk about you. How carefully do you have to make sure you sort of move yourself up gradually and make sure you get the fights that make sense to you and that you're not thrown too high too quickly?
Yeah, that's not, you know, I've got a good my dad be managing and. And he's the best manager in MMA, and that's just not because I'm a son. Look what he's done, you know. He just says you're fighting X on this date, and I just go, okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
That's as far as it goes. He knows more than me, but obviously, you know, it does no one any favours diving straight into the deep end. And you know, my first few fights, I built myself up, and I'm not going to deny that. And some people criticise it, but boxers do it all the time. I don't see what the issue is. You know, what's the point in going in there and just fighting monsters straight away when not only that, you don't get paid for it. So you know, I think the way we've done it and the way we're doing it, it's working great. So I'm going to go far.
And have you got a roadmap for the next 12 months? Have you got a plan laid out that you've spoken to your dad about? And you know, this is where we see ourselves in 12 months' time.
Yeah, you know, as I said, I want to fight Jack Grant in Dublin. And you know, it might have come across then in the cage a bit. But he's like, I've got something against him. I don't know Jack, but I think he's a really great fighter. I've watched him fight and stuff, obviously. And, you know, I just think it's going to be the biggest banger yet. Put a big fight on, because we're both bangers and we both go for it, and that's what people want to see. I think that'll be a fight. I think any fight I'm in, you want to watch it, you know. So.
Great stuff. Great performance tonight. Hope it all goes well for you in your future career. Best of luck.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
I also managed to corner Bama's head of media, Matt Bourne, who, as it turns out, lives not too far from me down here in Kent. He said he didn't do interviews, but we managed to get one out of him here. And just to chat to him about how the promotion has grown and the challenges that have faced him since he joined the promotion a few years back. It's an interesting listen. Check it out. This is Bama 21.
Yep.
I think the last Bama event I was at might have been Bama 10 or Bama 11. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how things have progressed. I mean, obviously you've been working for Bama throughout that time, and you've seen the domestic scene in general.
Yep.
And what's happened with that, and how the Bama brand has grown. I mean, what's been your experience of it?
Well, when I came into Bama, it was quite interesting because how I actually came into Bama was through their social media, because I saw a gap in what they were doing, and back in the day Izzy was in charge of PR, and I spoke to her and she put me in front of the MD and the CEO, and I just basically said to them, I said, you've got a gap here and there's this and you could do this, and they just turned around to me and said, do you want to do it? And so sort of from there, I've just built from there, and I've kind of learned along the way, and seeing Bama then to what Bama is now. I mean, Bama always had the building blocks in place. I think what a lot of people miss is what goes on behind the scenes. When we had that lull for a while after sort of 12 and 13, and we not disappeared, we were always there, but we went quiet for a while. It's because we were restructuring. It wasn't anything other, you know, it wasn't like we'd run out of money or anything like that. It's like people tried to conjecture and stuff like that. It wasn't anything like that. It was we went back, stripped everything back and said, right, this needs fixing, that needs fixing. And so it's really just been a building block to the point of Bama 20, because we knew we were going to be in the spike deal a long while ago. And obviously we couldn't say anything. It was obviously negotiated for a fair while, but we weren't allowed to say too much, so we knew where we were going. So Bama 20 was the point we were heading to, so we were slowly building things up, you know, replacing things. Some people came, some people went, and that's staff and fighters, and then, you know, we came out of the arenas for a while just because we wanted to get back to grassroots. We did the fight nights, you know, to start doing amateur fights. You know, we really wanted to sort of go back and start at the beginning again with that, and then sort of come back into the arenas and stuff. We wanted to make a real impact when we came back in with Spike as well, because it's a big deal for UK MMA. I mean, you know, having UK MMA on TV at the same time, you know, as boxing would go out on Channel 5, like this evening, you know, it's a big thing for UK MMA. So, you know, I'm just pleased to be a part of it. I mean, I still, you know, to this day, sometimes sit there in front of my computer screen going, you know, how did I get here? Why am I here sometimes? You know, I mean, it's not all been plain sailing. There has been ups and downs. But, you know, in general, it's been good, because I've actually learned a lot about the UK MMA, you know, from grassroots up. I mean, I knew a bit about it. You know, everybody comes in, they're a fan of certain other organisations and stuff. But it really made me go back and learn and watch video and see. And I've grown as well in it. So, you know, I mean, I'm not an expert, but I know a lot more than I did 2 years ago.
Yeah, and you talked about working up to sort of almost like a point where you're Bama 20. Obviously, we're at Bama 21 now. We're in that next stage, and I know your promotional slogan is "Welcome to the New Age."
Yep.
I guess it's kind of a reflection of that.
Yeah.
So, what's next for Bama? What's the next rung on the ladder for you guys?
What's next for Bama? Taking over the world, eh? that's probably a step too far. We just want to really establish ourselves. You know, I mean, everybody talks that, oh, I'm the number one in Europe, I'm the number one in the UK. We actually want to establish that. You know, we want to have an MMA organisation that people in this country can get behind, and it's, you know, and we can go, this is what we do, you know. We're not expecting to take Bellator or UFC's place. You know, we know we're not going to be world beaters. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to establish some of these guys. At the moment, Jack McGann's being interviewed. You know, we're trying to give these guys a platform, you know, and we just want to establish a big MMA organisation, you know, and hopefully we'll be around for a long while to come, you know, and be a show that people will want to come and see. So the next stage for us is is really sort of cementing where we've got to and then building the blocks for the next new age.
Yeah.
You know?
And as someone who sort of manages the media side of things, mm-hmm. and I spoke to Andreas earlier, and he made a really interesting and a very valid point that, as well as the fact that the fighters are getting the experience of fighting on a big stage domestically here at BAM, the other thing that they're getting the benefit of is dealing with media attention,
yeah.
conducting interviews.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, streamed weigh-ins, all this sort of stuff. So, as someone who looks after the media, is that something that you guys communicate with the fighters about? Is, you know, how valuable? Obviously, it's almost like another skill, another string to the bow that the fighters need to learn.
Absolutely. It's definitely part of, I don't want to say learning curve, because it sounds a little bit patronising, yeah. but, you know, it's part of the fighters' growing process, you know, because as, you know, as they get into the sort of bigger arenas and the bigger stuff, you know, you have to deal with media attention now. We're in an age where social media is everywhere. We're, you know, it's that day and age where you've got to be able to speak on media. You can be a great fighter, but if you can't talk and you can't promote yourself, then, you know, that's as much of your job as it is getting in the gym every day doing your weight cutting. And in fact, for some people, it's a harder exercise than weight cutting. So, yeah, I mean, I speak to a lot of the fighters, like, you know, obviously when they come on board, if they're involved in the main card, we spend time with them, we go out to shoots, you know, and I sit down with fighters, you know, as much as I can, when I can, and talk to them about, you know, what you want to be doing, what you want to be saying. You know, it's not just promoting. I'm not just trying to get them to promote BAMA, I'm trying to get them to promote their brand. So, you know, I mean, if, you know, Mark Diakese, for example, the Bone Crusher, you know, it's a great nickname. Nobody else has the Bone Crusher. So, you know, I've spoken to Mark about, you know, really push the Bone Crusher, you know, I'm going to crush his bone, you know, that kind of thing. But it's also, you know, like I say, dealing with the media, and it's getting them to, you know, not just us, but their sponsors and stuff like that. It's a big opportunity. And I've, you know, I've spoken to a lot of fighters and said, look, you know, you get the media part right, then the sponsors come on board, you know, and then you can do a lot more with what you're doing, because, you know, you can have more income coming in. You know, it's not just about turning up, getting paid to come punch someone in the head, or, you know, rip their arm off, or whatever it is. You know what I mean? It's actually, it's a very well-rounded game.
Mm. And we're in Birmingham, which I think is where it all started for BAMA way back when. And
for my,
you know,
time,
yeah, there's been a succession of big events held here in Birmingham. Is this kind of like BAMA's home base, if you like?
I think so. I mean, obviously we're based out of London, but this is like, it's almost like a spiritual home. You know, I mean, Birmingham's where we've probably had all our biggest events, our most successful events. So, and I think we kind of feel comfortable here, and it's also because it's central. It's great doing events in London, but, you know, people from up north, it's a much longer trek. As much as when we go up north, it's a longer trek for everybody down south. So Birmingham's probably about as central as you can get with a decent sized arena. So I think that's probably why it happened in the first place. But yeah, I mean, it has become our home from home. You know, we're used to the arena, we know the hotels, we know the staff, you know, and it's great to work with, but it's a lot easier to work with people, you know, as well. And a lot of the fighters come from the Midlands at the moment and the Northwest. So, you know, again, it's not too far for them all to travel. You know, a lot of things make sense. And it's not just a financial thing. I think, it you know, it just feels right.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you having me here. Really enjoying the event. And hopefully we'll be back here for at least another 21 more.
Ah, yeah, let's hope beyond that. Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you for your time.
Now, as I mentioned earlier on this podcast, I don't get to go to too many domestic events these days. But someone who does and really does put the hard yards in and racks up the miles up and down this sceptred aisle, covering the sport at all sorts of different levels, from village hall all the way up to international events, is Steve Cook Abbott of SevereMMA.com. He's been there. He's seen a lot of stuff, and you know, I wanted to just pick his brains and get a sense from him of how the domestic scene is going and the role that BAMA in particular, being that we were at that event, the role that they had to play in the development of the sport going forward. All right, we're here at backstage at BAMA 21 with Steve Cook Abbott of Severe MMA, a stalwart of the UK MMA scene. He's been to more events than I've had hot dinners, and I've had a few hot dinners, let me tell you that. Great to talk to you. You've been at probably most, if not all, of these BAMA events, certainly in recent years. How much have you seen this brand and this promotion grow, and UK MMA as a whole?
Well, you know, BAMA started as arguably along, you you know, you had your Cage Rage and things like that. But Bama were, at the beginning, they were the premier organization in UK MMA without question. I think that, I think riding the wave of Tom Watson and Alex Reed, Tom Watson and Ninja, really helped put Bama on the map. And I think they'll be the first to admit that during the middling numbers, probably 12 through 15, there was a consistency issue with Bama. They were putting on shows every year, but it might be 6 months, 5 months, 9 months. And so I think they lost a lot of talent to Cage Warriors at the time that were kind of surging forward with multi-fight contracts and what have you. Then comes Bama 16, 17, and a couple of their fight nights, and all of a sudden, Bama really have sort of taken their foot off the gas, as it were, and opened up. Their last show was, I mean, you didn't think that you'd get a much better UK MMA card, and then this one comes along, and when you look at the fighters on paper, good Lord, I mean, it is the premier of UK MMA. Bama's journey, I think, is only just starting, though. I think they've had some hills and valleys, but I think we're now, I think they're, if we're at the roller coaster, they're now climbing to a higher peak, and they're going to go on a hell of a ride. You know, Ireland coming up September, we'll find out if Ireland is a one-man MMA country or an MMA country, and I think it's the second, and I think Bama's arrival in Ireland is really going to shake things up.
Yeah, and I've always seen, certainly recently, the sort of the UK market, if you like, not just domestically but internationally as well, the fan base is there. The fan base is clearly there, and sometimes it's been too disparate. There's a lot of organisations all trying their own thing, which is all well and good. It's fine. But, and also the media hasn't quite caught up. Certainly from a mass media point of view, there's still, it's almost like the market is there, but the media attention is still growing into it.
Yeah, and you know, that's kind of a double-edged sword for guys like, well, guys like me. You know, we're not full-time journalists. We don't work for, you know, a media source as such. We work for Severe MMA that cover, you know, MMA across all levels throughout the UK, Ireland, and overseas. But as soon as, you know, the day that the BBC Sport all of a sudden go, yeah, we're going to, you know, legitimize this, we're going to make, and I think, I'm going to go on a side note, I think the UK MMAF and the IMMAF are going to go a long way to helping legitimize this sport at the grassroots level, making sure that the amateur is all tightened up and that rule sets are followed and that there's a clear progression for fighters, not just fighters, for referees, for coaches, for judges. I think that's all, it's all really positive, and it'll grow up. But, you know, the day BBC or, you know, BT Sport decided to show up here, would the guys that have been covering this sport in this country, you know, since, as it were, the dark days, if they get pushed out, I'm not necessarily sure it's a good thing. It's great for the sport because, of course, you want that market and you want that audience in front of you. But I would hope that some of the old school guys got to stick around as well.
Absolutely, and it's a topic that I've spoke to a few people about. Having a big arena event like this on a regular basis is obviously great for the fighters. It prepares them for sort of their graduation to the big global shows.
Yep.
But how important is it that they also get the opportunity to interact with media on a level like this and do these interviews on camera and all that sort of stuff?
You know, the fight game, whether, you know, no matter how you cut it, it's the entertainment business. And a fighter could be the most technically brilliant fighter, interesting to watch, exciting in the cage, but if you put a mic in front of him and it's a piece of wood that's talking, they're never going to get the same traction as somebody who can be eloquent as well. I mean, come on, you look at Chael Sonnen, look at Conor McGregor. These guys are fantastic athletes. They are fantastic fighters. They are world-class. But on top of that, they're world-class minds as well, and they can talk the fans into wanting to see them win or lose.
Yeah.
Personalities puts bums on seats. The kind of media things that the fighters are doing here as they progress through their career to, as you say, a more global stage, I think the media stuff that we do is lovely. But again, you know, the people you've spoken to, that, you know, Bama's the big sort of UK show, they we'll be doing, you know, the regional shows and doing the same thing, the amateurs and doing the same thing. And I think that the grassroots, both from the media and the fighters, you know, is still popular here and perhaps more so than other places. So it will get there. But mainstream media, that's going to be down to the UK MMAF, I have no doubt.
Yeah, and we've seen some, I think we've got about two or three fights left on the card as we speak now. We've seen some real real quality talent coming through domestic level. Who would you pick out as, if you were putting your chips on someone, say this guy's going all the way to the top? Who from this area would you say has got the best shot?
Well, look, I think as much as I admire Tom Duquesnoy, I think he's a brilliant fighter, an excellent champion. I think he's going to have his hands full with Brendan Loughnan. I think Brendan Loughnan's one to keep an eye on. I know he's had a taste of the higher. With Tough and what have you, but he's also had to come back and start from almost from the ground floor up, and that's what he's done, and now he's competing for the Bama title. I think he's one to watch, but if somebody kind of that a name that people might scratch their brain but they don't know, third fight, Dirty Harry Marple. Mm-hmm. Dirty Harry Marple at welterweight or at lightweight or whatever weight class he chooses. This kid is special. This kid is something else. And I believe it's only a matter of time before he competes at the highest level. I know he's only three fights into his career, but I don't see any reason that he's not going all the way. You just saw Jack McGann fight. I know he's coming off a loss against Mark Diakese, who's the Lonsdale lightweight champion now, but, that game plan won that fight. Diakese implemented it, did exactly what he needed to do, the perfect game plan to beat a Jack McGann, but I'm not sure whether or not anybody else will be able to use that game plan again. Jack McGann and Dirty Harry Marple, the two on the card so far that definitely you keep an eye on.
Great stuff. Thanks for your time. Really appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
SevereMMA.com.
SevereMMA.com. Thank you very much.
The last man I managed to grab a word with was heavyweight Mark Godbeer, who wrote himself into Bama's history books by becoming the promotion's first ever heavyweight champion. And as you can tell from the interview that's about to follow, he was pretty pleased about it. The new heavyweight champion of Bama, Mark the Hand of Godbeer. I don't think I've ever seen a champion look so proud walking into a media room after winning a title. I mean, just how much does this championship and this win mean to you?
It means a lot, man. Anyone that knows me knows I'm quite open with my personality, I say what I think at the time. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. So I just let it flow. I let my emotions flow. I'm not false. I just, what you see is what you get, man. So, and it feels great. It feels absolutely great. Yeah.
And you said in a previous interview, eight long years, I think you said. Eight long years. What has it taken to get from 8 years ago to right, sitting here right now?
A lot of hard work, dedication, perseverance. I've gone through ups and downs. One minute I wanted to retire, next minute I didn't know whether I could fight again through injuries. For every fight that goes through this is a rock and roll, lifestyle is up and down. And it's great, mate. I just feel chuffed. I'm just chuffed. Nice. you're talking to me and I've just drifted off thinking, what have I done?
Nice. It's great. It's brilliant because you see some people, they're still cold and calculating afterwards. Cheers, it's great to see someone actually enjoying their victory and enjoying the fact that they're champion. I mean, this is going to obviously put more eyeballs on you and your career, and also it's putting a target on your back as well, how do you feel about that, the added pressure, more media obligations, everything? It's going to up the game everywhere for you, isn't it?
I feel like that, I'm at the best point in my career mentally and physically at the moment. I mean, I'm not worried about putting a target on my back. This is what I want. If you've got a target on your back, you're obviously doing something right in you, so there's nothing wrong with that, really.
Yeah, and so you come from the West Country down there, sort of Bristol. Yeah. How much coverage do you get from the media down there?
Yeah, lots and lots of coverage. I come from quite a small town. Maybe the local newspaper's a bit slow on the uptake because, I come from... The local newspaper is probably bought by 80% older generation, so they're having a big cage right on the front. Maybe they're not quite ready, but maybe, just maybe, I might have a good write-up this time. And, I had the whole town behind me. You check my Facebook, the whole town's behind me. My whole town is backed me from day one. So, it's only a matter of time before the local paper has to jump on it and give me what recognition I deserve. So,
brilliant. Well, it's been a long road to get here. You're about to start on a brand new one as a champion in Bama. Hope all the injuries heal up and everything. And you're back in action again soon. Best of luck.